have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome back to the Monday night edition of At Your Service. If you normally don't listen on Wednesday evenings, make sure that you tune in. I'm going to be out this Wednesday because of Cardinals baseball. But Wednesday nights, we delve into topics like this. And I'm glad that you are a part of the show this evening. Call or text 314-436-7900. In the last segment, I was talking about how to be a better consumer of news. I think the word is discernment. And if you are a church-going person, you've probably heard a pastor at church talk about discernment. That is understanding what it is you're actually reading. Discernment. And yet, I think we can be discerning consumers of the news. For example, I know you've seen this story. Have you seen the stories over the last few years about, I believe it's called the Beepocalypse, bee Armageddon, that the bees are all dying? You've heard that story, haven't you? Of course you have. You've heard it. You've read it. You've seen it. You've consumed stories about it. And I'm not trying to suggest that that wasn't actually a legitimate story. I mean, it was. It was true about 20 years ago, around 2022, 2023, 2002, 2003, 2004, rather, many American honeybees did die. And what happened was is that there was what's called colony collapse disorder, that the honeybees just disappeared. Nobody knows why. And I'll get to some theories about that in just a moment. But it was widely reported. I mean, for example, there was a story in Time magazine that said, "Is this the end of honeybees?" Or I believe it was on Fox that said, "Do you like to eat?" Fox News said, "Do you like to eat? You may not be able to if all the bees die." So there are all these stories about the bees disappearing. And again, it started from just like a myth, just like a legend. It did have a basis in reality. Here's what you can do, though. Go right now and Google. You can Google it. Don't do this if you're driving. But Google, what is the current bee population? And you know what you're going to find? You're going to be stunned if you do that. Because as of March of 2024, the United States honeybee population is estimated to be at 3.8 million bees. Now, that's in a context. You don't know if that's a lot or little, right? Well, it's a 31% increase of bees since 2007. And right now, it's the highest population of bees that has ever been recorded. Ever. In the history of recording the number of bees that we have in this country, we're at an all-time high. But just like when I was talking about the Hunter Biden laptop story, where all the news media was very happy to report to you that this is Russian disinformation. And then when it was proven by the FBI that it was not, none of them were telling you that. This is that same type of story. Because when was the last time you saw a story now that says, you know, all that reporting that we did about the bees being gone, they're actually recovered and we're doing great now? We're not hearing any of that. And there's really two reasons for that. First of all, scare stories get better ratings. They do. It's much better for a TV show or for a magazine to say, all the food you like to eat could disappear in 2 years. Buy this magazine and read how. Okay, that's going to make people buy your magazine. And nobody wants to say, you know that story we told you about a couple of years ago? It's all garbage. Nobody's going to say that. So that's the one reason. But there's actually a bigger, I think, more conspiratorial reason why you don't see that. Because if you remember the bee story, and I just remember it distinctly because I had all these conversations with my daughters. I have three girls. And when this was going on, "Daddy, are all the bees going to go away?" I said, "No, all the bees are not going to disappear. Don't worry, honey. It'll be fine." But it was scary. and kind of like global warming stories that say, oh, in 10 years, we're all New York City is going to be underwater in 10 years. Crazy stories. Again, they're not coming true. They're designed to scare you, right? But the other is a bit more sinister in terms of the B story, because there were a lot of environmental groups. Like there's a group called the Environmental Working Group, and there's another group called the Pesticide Action Network. And both of those groups have used this B story to basically attack pesticides, to attack the use of pesticides in this country. And that actually could do more harm than good. Now, how can that happen? It's very simple. You hear a lot of people talking about organic. What does organic even mean today? Oh, it's all natural. If it's all natural, it must be good for you. Really? Sugar, last time I checked, is natural. And if you eat a lot of sugar, it's not good for you. So just because something is organic doesn't mean it's good for you. Let me give you another example. When you see people talking about organic pesticides, what does that mean? Well, the most commonly used organic pesticide is something called copper sulfate. That's considered a natural chemical and a natural pesticide. But copper sulfate is one of the most toxic chemicals in the world. So when you eliminate pesticides under the fear of killing bees, you may actually be eliminating safer pesticides and making people revert to more dangerous pesticides just because they're considered organic. So why do I mention all of this? Again, I want you to be a discerning consumer of the news, not just a gullible consumer like so many media outlets want you to be today. Hey, I've got more news stories, including the weed market. How many electric charging stations can you get for $7.5 billion in government funding? And the after effects of the California minimum wage disaster. More coming up next at your service, KMOX. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you until 10 o'clock this evening. And if you've listened to my show over on Wednesday nights, usually on Wednesday nights, this is the Monday night edition of Brad Young At Your Service because of Cardinal baseball this Wednesday. But I've been critical, and I've been critical for a long time, of legal marijuana sales. Why? Is it because I'm just totally against marijuana? Actually, in my legal profession, during the day, I handle a lot of personal injury cases on the defense side, representing companies who are being sued by people who get hurt. And I spend most of my day reviewing medical records, deposing doctors, asking doctors to clarify their opinions. I spend all day with my nose in medical records. And so I've got a pretty good sense of medicine from an observer standpoint. Okay, you don't want me to do surgery on your knee. You don't want me to do that. Even though I could tell you what's going to happen, you don't want me to be the one actually using the knife. But one of the things I've noticed is that as opioids are prescribed, people get addicted. And there's a very high addiction rate to people who are on Vicodin, OxyContin, oxycodone, fentanyl, so forth. Marijuana is actually a very good treatment source for people who have long-term pain issues, pain management. It's less addictive. It's cheaper. It doesn't create other problems like opioids do. So I'm not coming at this from a perspective that says, you know, marijuana is from the devil. Okay, that's not what I'm saying. But I've been extremely critical of the legalization of marijuana. Why? Because the entire thing was built, I think, on a lie. The premise was built on a lie. And I've been laying this out since in 2018, Missouri legalized medical marijuana. And I said at the time, this is just a stepping stone to allow us to get legal recreational marijuana. And sure enough, in 2022, we had legalized recreational marijuana. And what was the premise of that? The premise was all built on one idea, primarily more than any other. And that is Missouri can tax legal marijuana and this will give more revenue to the state of Missouri. That was the biggest premise. That was the issue du jour to push people into voting for legalized marijuana. And my point was, that's a lie. And the example that I gave was this. The exact same marketing plan was done to get legalized gambling in the state of Missouri. And first of all, it was only relegated to certain places. It had to be on a body of water. It had to be on a ship. We're going to make it very difficult to do. And it's really going to help the state of Missouri financially. It's going to help cities financially. And then once it became more commonplace, then they skipped and junked the whole has to be on a body of water. Now there's no boat required. Just come on into the casino, waste your money, and put money into the government coffers through taxes. It was the exact same marketing plan. It'll help the children. It'll go into education, right? How's that worked out for us for gambling revenue? Not much at all. Why? Because the gambling revenue was told to go into schools to help our schools. But what the state does, every government does this, whether it's in Missouri, Illinois, or the federal government, the money they used to put into education, they stopped putting in because now it was being funded by gambling revenue, and so they could spend and waste that money somewhere else. Happens in every government bureaucracy. Marijuana was the exact same shell game. And let me give you a great example. I saw this story today, and I was excited to bring it to you. Because Colorado, remember, Colorado was the national symbol of what could be achieved by the primarily the left in this country that like big government programs. And they sold it on the idea that recreational marijuana will allow millions, tens and hundreds of millions of dollars of tax revenue to come in to state coffers. And you know what? It did. It did for many, many years. In fact, in 2020, the marijuana weed market in Colorado soared to $2.2 billion total. And Colorado took in almost $400 million in tax revenue in 2020. They were rolling in the green. And I don't mean green weed. I mean green dollars. Great thing, right? Well, let's fast forward from 2020 to today. Now, as of 2024, sales in Colorado have plummeted to $1.5 billion in total. That's down from $2.2 billion in 2020. This is 2023 dollars because obviously 2024 isn't over yet. Unless, of course, you're high while you're listening to this, you may not realize 2024 is not over yet. But here's the thing. Now we're having layoffs in the weed business in Colorado. Companies are closing. They're downsizing. Weed cannabis dispensaries are closing across the state of Colorado. And here's what's interesting. Remember the golden goose argument that marijuana is the golden goose. It will lay golden eggs for the government. And so government can have money to continue on with the business of government. Well, any idea that's sold to you as benefiting the government, you should really stop and question it just from that perspective alone. Because just like Ronald Reagan said in the 1980s, the scariest words you will ever hear are these: I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. Those should be the scariest words you'll ever hear. But now the state taxes in Colorado have gone from about $400 million in 2020 to $200 million in 2023. They've dropped by almost half, somewhere between a third and half. Now, here's what happens. Let me tell you what happens when it comes to government spending, right? When governments are in an era where tax revenues go up, what do? They figure out ways how to give that money away as quickly as possible. So as Colorado has been increasing the weed tax money, they've been figuring out new and inventive ways on how to give that money away. But what happens when that money plateaus and that money starts to go down? Now, those government programs that have been reliant on the weed money, now they don't have the same level of weed money coming in. What do they have to do? Now they start taking away money from other programs, because when was the last time a government program was ever canceled? Never. There's never been a government program canceled. Maybe you could find one government program, but realistically speaking, government programs never disappear. Do you know, to this day, if you're one of those people that has a landline, if you have an old landline telephone, not a cell line, but a landline, you are still paying taxes today. Google it. You're still paying taxes today to pay for the Spanish-American War in the 1800s. You're still paying a tax on your telephone from 130 years ago. Because once that tax got started, it never goes away. Once a government program gets started, it doesn't disappear. So now you've got this growth of programs in Colorado that are now collapsing on themselves because the revenue coming in from the taxation of marijuana is now reducing the tax flow into the state of Colorado. And there's a number of reasons why that is. And this is why I love economics. Because as legal weed has become commonplace, not just in Colorado, but right here in Missouri, right next door in Illinois, what's happened to the illegal drug market, the illegal weed market? Very simple. It's better now than it's ever been before. What? How can that be, you ask? If weed is legalized, who would buy illegal weed? Who would buy weed off the guy at the street corner if you can buy it in a store? Ah, here's how that works. I'm going to make up some numbers so you can understand how this happens. Let's say and I've never bought weed in my life, so I have no idea how the costs are. But I'm going to give you the example of what economists tell us are going on right now. It's this. Let's say if you go to your normal neighborhood weed dispensary, a bag of weed costs $100. I'm making this up just for discussion purposes. $100. And illegal weed used to cost $130. If you can buy it for $100, what do you think that illegal drug dealer has to charge now to sell you weed? He can't charge $130 if you can buy it legally for $100. So what does he do? He drops the price to $90. So now that weed is legal, more people consume the product, and therefore the number of potential customers for illegal marijuana grows. In fact, it grows exponentially because now it's legal. It's fine. It's no different than ibuprofen. You can just buy it there at the street corner, right? Or buy it at the dispensary. It's practically like Walgreens. I just walk in and buy it. They charge me a tax on it. I walk out. Wow, I've got gummies that can get me stoned. But now the illegal market drops the price because the illegal weed doesn't have to pay taxes. The illegal weed doesn't have to file reports with the state of Missouri. Illegal weed doesn't have to build a building and doesn't have to put concrete barriers in front of the building to keep cars from smashing into there and then going and stealing all their product. So their costs are next to nothing. They pay nothing in taxes. And so they drop the price to $80 or $90 a bag, instead of the $100 a bag that legal weed has to charge. So now what happens to that illegal weed market? It grows. It expands. It actually gets bigger. And what does that do to the legal weed market? Just like what's happening right now in Colorado, it plummets. And when it plummets, the tax revenue goes down. So the entire premise of legalizing marijuana in Missouri to increase tax revenues, to help the children, to help the veterans, to help the senior citizens, is all built on a pyramid scheme that is not going to come to fruition. It's happening right now in Colorado. It's happening right now in California. And in a few years, it'll be happening right here in Missouri. The exact same thing happened with gambling. The exact same thing is going to happen with legalized weed. What do you think, though? Are you happy that Missouri has legalized weed? Do you think we are going to be getting the benefits of legalized weed that we were promised as citizens? Or is it all so much smoke, not just coming from the blunts, but actually smoke coming from the government officials who have sold us on the idea of legalized weed? 314-436-7900. Call or text. At your service. We'll be right back. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in on a Monday evening, normally Wednesdays, in Monday night tonight because of Cardinal baseball on Wednesday. Mike's been holding through the break. Hey, Mike, welcome to KMOX.
Hi, Brad. Thanks for having me on this evening.
Sure.
It's a pleasant surprise to have you on a different night than usual.
Yeah, normally I'm on Wednesday nights, but, you know, Monday night's growing on me.
Understood. Yeah, it's always good to hear your voice. Really appreciate all the opinions and perspectives you share.
Thank you.
I was just calling tonight. Got a curious question. With regards to the medicinal side, right, some people definitely take the marijuana for medical reasons. When it comes to getting hired for a job, I think I know the answer, but what rights coverage do they have, shall we say, within the state of Missouri? And what recommendations might exist short of stopping it to get hired, right? Because so many places seem to have, you need to be able to pass the drug test, right?
Correct.
But they don't seem to have a recommendation for recognizing when the doses might be low to their medicinal. So are you aware of what options may exist for people to be able to pass those tests, or what recommendations might be out there short of stopping cold turkey before they get hired? And more importantly, after that, maybe you pass the test to begin with, but you still need it medicinally for whatever pain you have. How would you pass the test long term? I'm not sure that you can you?
Well, that's a great question. And it's actually something that I lecture on and I teach my clients at my law firm all the time. So this is a topic I'm very, very familiar with. First of all, let's talk about situations where someone is hiring. They're going for a job interview and there's a drug test. Can employers in Missouri test you for marijuana? Absolutely. Just like they can test you for alcohol, right? The fact that it's legal doesn't mean that employers are prevented from testing you for it. But secondly, marijuana is different from alcohol, as you well know, because it stays in your system longer. That's where the question becomes for recreational use, because there are still something called metabolites that are in your system for up to 30, 60 days after marijuana is used. But those metabolites appear differently on a drug test than active THC. I've looked at drug tests for both, and you can look and see the difference. So from an employer's perspective, they're going to see either metabolites showing that you may have smoked pot on Saturday night instead of Monday for your drug test. And if there's THC, they're going to know you were smoking weed on the way to the job interview. So they're going to know that difference. But here's the difference I think you're zeroing in on. And let me make sure I answer your question before we move on. And that is when it comes to medicinal use. If someone is using it medicinally, you can get a prescription for that from your physician. And if you do, then it's treated no differently in Missouri than if you have to have a prescription for hydrocodone, or for if you've got a back problem, you've got a cervical disc bulge, you've got spinal stenosis in your lumbar spine, then it's treated exactly the same, which means as long as you're not in a safety-sensitive position like driving or operating machinery or flying a plane or driving a car or driving an 18-wheeler, one of those kinds of jobs, it's going to be treated, and the employer cannot discriminate against you because you have a disability or an illness that requires medication. Does that answer your question?
Actually, it does, yeah. So to your point, really just having that prescription makes the difference. So I guess then guidance for people who might be in that situation is to make sure that they are able to fill that out on whatever application form, and more importantly, probably speak to the people ahead of time so they're aware of it.
Yes.
So
yeah.
To make sure the form may not plan for that. Oh,
exactly.
We didn't think about that. Here's how we want you to give us the information before you give us the pen and paper back. Right?
Exactly.
Or do it online.
Because under the Americans with Disabilities Act, Mike, an employer cannot discriminate against someone because they have what's called a serious medical condition. And so if someone's using medical marijuana to treat a serious medical condition, an employer cannot discriminate against them based upon that. Now, the problem comes if somebody is just buying weed at their local dispensary, having a good time on the weekends, and then when they test positive, they tell their employer, oh, you know, I got a bad knee from playing football when I was in high school.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the ticket. Okay, then it becomes a problem because now you cannot substantiate that you're using the marijuana for medical reasons when it looks like you're using it for recreational purposes.
And that makes sense. That's how the prescription proves it's legit. So thank you very much.
Exactly. You're welcome, Mike.
We needed to share with somebody. Have a great night. Thanks, Brad.
Great to talk to you, and thanks for calling in. Daniel's been holding for a very long time. Hey, Daniel, what's on your mind this evening?
Good evening, Brad.
Good evening.
I'm a retired lawyer, and I was listening to your overview of the marijuana legalization question,
yes.
And I found it shallow and in several cases, you were using analogies that really weren't on point.
You know what? I love, Daniel, let me tell you right now, before we dive into this, I love callers who disagree with me. So thank you for calling in. I am not so shallow as to be afraid of someone challenging my ideas. So in what way, Daniel, did you find my arguments shallow?
It's because I sensed that in you that I picked up the phone, quite frankly. Let's start with the basic.
Okay.
The basic is the overarching question, which is why God Almighty, in his infinite wisdom, would endow human beings with cannabinoid receptor sites all throughout their body and no ability to fulfill these cannabinoid receptor sites with endogenously generated cannabinoids. Just like with vitamin C, we have vitamin C receptor sites throughout our entire body, but unlike most mammals, we cannot synthesize enough vitamin C. We must obtain it externally. This is a profound question, because this is the truth. So if you actually start with this as the beginning of your inquiry, what you realize is that the whole system is completely insane. Whatever direction you look at it from, you have to ask yourself, is perhaps the optimum use of marijuana for any individual exactly the minimal level necessary to prevent mental scurvy, which is what happens to a person when they don't have enough vitamin C, so that actually zero consumption of marijuana is to be avoided.
Okay.
And the general abuse of marijuana that represents marijuana use today is also to be avoided. And what actually should be done is that everybody...
We have a winner.
their minimal dosage level.
Let me jump in here for just a second, Daniel, because one of the things that you mentioned was my arguments were shallow, which is fine. It's not the first time I've heard that.
Okay,
nor would be the last.
How many receptor sites do we have for gambling?
Daniel?
We have none. That's why it wasn't a good analogy.
Daniel,
gambling is
A conversation is when you get to talk and I let you talk. And then I get to respond, and you let me talk. That's called a conversation. It's like a tennis match.
Yes, but I'm a lawyer, and lawyers don't converse and interrogate.
Well, I'm a lawyer, too. And but I've learned that we have a conversation.
Okay, but I wanted to give an example.
No. I got to respond to what you said before we move on to a different idea. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in on a Monday evening, normally Wednesdays. In Monday night tonight because of Cardinal baseball on Wednesday. Mike's been holding through the break. Hey, Mike, welcome to KMOX.
Hi, Brad. Thanks for having me on this evening.
Sure.
It's a pleasant surprise to have you on a different night than usual.
Yeah, normally I'm on Wednesday nights, but, Monday night's growing on me.
Understood. Yeah, it's always good to hear your voice. Really appreciate all the opinions and perspectives you share.
Thank you.
I was just calling tonight. Got a curious question. With regards to the medicinal side, right, some people definitely take the marijuana for medical reasons. When it comes to getting hired for a job, I think I know the answer, but what rights coverage do they have, shall we say, within the state of Missouri? And what recommendations might exist short of stopping it to get hired, right? Because so many places seem to have, you need to be able to pass the drug test, right?
Correct.
But they don't seem to have a recommendation for recognizing when the doses might be low to their medicinal. So are you aware of what options may exist for people to be able to pass those tests, or what recommendations might be out there short of stopping cold turkey before they get hired? And more importantly, after that, maybe you pass the test to begin with, but you still need it medicinally for whatever pain you have. How would you pass the test long term? I'm not sure that you can you?
Well, that's a great question. And it's actually something that I lecture on and I teach my clients at my law firm all the time. So this is a topic I'm very, very familiar with. First of all, let's talk about situations where someone is hiring. They're going for a job interview and there's a drug test. Can employers in Missouri test you for marijuana? Absolutely. Just like they can test you for alcohol. Right? The fact that it's legal doesn't mean that employers are prevented from testing you for it. But secondly, marijuana is different from alcohol, as you well know, because it stays in your system longer. That's where the question becomes for recreational use, because there are still something called metabolites that are in your system for up to 30, 60 days after marijuana is used. But those metabolites appear differently on a drug test than active THC. I've looked at drug tests for both, and you can look and see the difference. So from an employer's perspective, they're going to see either metabolites showing that you may have smoked pot on Saturday night instead of Monday for your drug test. And if there's THC, they're going to know you were smoking weed on the way to the job interview. So they're going to know that difference. But here's the difference I think you're zeroing in on. Let me make sure I answer your question before we move on. And that is when it comes to medicinal use. If someone is using it medicinally, you can get a prescription for that from your physician. And if you do, then it's treated no differently in Missouri than if you have to have a prescription for hydrocodone, or for if you've got a back problem, you've got a cervical disc bulge, you've got spinal stenosis in your lumbar spine, then it's treated exactly the same, which means as long as you're not in a safety-sensitive position like driving or operating machinery or flying a plane or driving a car or driving an 18-wheeler, one of those kinds of jobs, it's going to be treated, and the employer cannot discriminate against you because you have a disability or an illness that requires medication. Does that answer your question?
Actually, it does, yes. So to your point, really just having that prescription makes the difference. So I guess then guidance for people who might be in that situation is to make sure that they are able to fill that out on whatever application form, and more importantly, probably speak to the people ahead of time so they're aware of it.
Yes.
So
yeah.
To make sure the form may not plan for that. Oh,
exactly.
We didn't think about that. Here's how we want you to give us the information before you give us the pen and paper back. Right?
Exactly.
Because
under the Americans with Disabilities Act, Mike, an employer cannot discriminate against someone because they have what's called a serious medical condition. And so if someone's using medical marijuana to treat a serious medical condition, an employer cannot discriminate against them based upon that. Now, the problem comes if somebody is just buying weed at their local dispensary, having a good time on the weekends, and then when they test positive, they tell their employer, oh, you know, I got a bad knee from playing football when I was in high school.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the ticket. Okay, then it becomes a problem because now you cannot substantiate that you're using the marijuana for medical reasons when it looks like you're using it for recreational purposes.
And that makes sense. That's how the prescription proves it's legit. So thank you very
much.
Exactly.
You're welcome, Mike.
We needed to share with somebody. Have a great night. Thanks, Brad.
Great to talk to you, and thanks for calling in. Daniel's been holding for a very long time. Hey, Daniel, what's on your mind this evening?
Good evening, Brad.
Good evening.
I'm a retired lawyer, and I was listening to your overview of the marijuana legalization question,
yes.
And I found it shallow, and in several cases, you were using analogies that really weren't on point.
You know what? I love, Daniel, let me tell you right now, before we dive into this, I love callers who disagree with me. So thank you for calling in. I am not so shallow as to be afraid of someone challenging my ideas. So in what way, Daniel, did you find my arguments shallow?
It's because I sensed that in you that I picked up the phone, quite frankly. Let's start with the basic.
Okay.
The basic is the overarching question, which is why God Almighty, in his infinite wisdom, would endow human beings with cannabinoid receptor sites all throughout their body and no ability to fulfill these cannabinoid receptor sites with endogenously generated cannabinoids. Just like with vitamin C, we have vitamin C receptor sites throughout our entire body, but unlike most mammals, we cannot synthesize enough vitamin C. We must obtain it externally. This is a profound question, because this is the truth. So if you actually start with this as the beginning of your inquiry, what you realize is that the whole system is completely insane. Whatever direction you look at it from, you have to ask yourself, is perhaps the optimum use of marijuana for any individual exactly the minimal level necessary to prevent mental scurvy, which is what happens to a person when they don't have enough vitamin C, so that actually zero consumption of marijuana is to be avoided,
okay.
And the general abuse of marijuana that represents marijuana use today is also to be avoided. And what actually should be done is that everybody
we have a winner.
Their minimal dosage level.
Let me jump in here for just a second, Daniel, because one of the things that you mentioned was my arguments were shallow, which is fine. It's not the first time I've heard that.
Okay,
nor would be the last.
How many
receptor sites
do we have for gambling?
Daniel,
we have none. That's
Daniel,
why it wasn't a good analogy.
Daniel,
gambling is
a
not
conversation.
Related.
A conversation is when you get to talk and I let you talk. And then I get to respond, and you let me talk. That's called a conversation. It's like a tennis match.
Yes, but I'm a lawyer, and lawyers don't converse, they interrogate.
Well, I'm a lawyer, too, and
okay.
And so, but I've learned that we have a conversation.
Okay, but I wanted to give an example.
Hang on. I got to respond to what you said before we move on to a different idea, and that's this. You made the comparison to vitamin C, and you are correct that human beings cannot self-manufacture enough vitamin C. However, the difference between vitamin C and cannabinoids is this, that vitamin C is necessary, not even necessary, but a requirement for our health and well-being, particularly when it comes to our immune system. Last time I checked, I've not seen any research studies indicating that marijuana or the cannabinoids were required for our health and well-being and for the sustainment of our immune system.
May I give you a search term and then your ignorance will be obliterated?
Yes, please.
Look up microdosing.
I know what microdosing is.
The concept that there is a minimum requirement, a vitamin M, as it were. But the point being that with other things like gambling, mm-hmm. Gambling may be legalized. It may be legalized for nasty political reasons or greediness or whatever. But we don't have gambling receptor sites in us. This is something where there is a biochemical and physiological relationship between these particular compounds. And by the way, if there's any scam here at all, it's the people who tried to get marijuana legalized by saying this is medicinal. This is recreational. It's the same substance. It's a compound.
It is.
And
it
doesn't matter
compound.
Whether you label it medicinal or not. However, there are CBDs which do not have any psychoactive effects.
Correct.
And these are the ones that reduce inflammation. And,
exactly.
And you can call those. But the point is that that's not weed. That's actually just another anti-inflammatory agent.
Now, the gambling advocates would argue with you, Daniel. I'm not one of them, but those who are advocating gambling would say that our bodies are designed with dopamine receptors, and that gambling itself is what triggers dopamine receptors. And so if God himself in his infinite wisdom designed us with dopamine receptors, then why should we prevent gambling, which in fact triggers the production of dopamine, which feeds those dopamine receptors?
The same dopamine receptors can be triggered by listening to music that the individual deems awesome, and that's a lot less expensive to the bank account.
Well,
gambling only exists when you can't get your hands on awesome music.
Okay, Daniel, I so love your phone call because you've actually raised an issue that I have never heard. I've been arguing against the recreational use of marijuana for years. No one has ever called to say, Brad, God himself made us to consume marijuana, and therefore we should legalize it.
I'll give you my ultimate conclusion, which is all we have time for.
Wrap
maybe
it up,
someday you'll have me back.
We have
the
to
ultimate
go to a
conclusion
break.
Is that marijuana should never be legalized, and we should all be using little amounts of it.
Okay. Well, Daniel, what a fantastic call, my
because
friend.
Otherwise, it results in people smoking blunts, and there you are. All of the maladies come from that. Abuse is basically what people do. There's actually very little marijuana use in America. Most of it is actually excessive use or abuse. It's
absolutely.
Like if somebody said,
hey,
beer is
Daniel,
good, and somebody says, what's the minimum dose? And somebody says a six-pack. That's where we are with marijuana.
I completely agree. Hey, we have to go to a break here. But please listen on Wednesday evenings. I would love to hear from you again. Brad Young, at your service. We'll be right back. We are riding into the last segment here on Camel X on a Monday evening. Again, if this is the first time you've caught me on a Monday evening, welcome to the party. Normally, I'm on Wednesday nights. I'm on Monday night tonight because of the Cardinals baseball on Wednesday. But listen, tune in on Wednesdays. We have a blast. We've got great callers like we had already this evening every Wednesday night. And glad you are a part of the show. One of the things that, again, I like to talk about a lot of economic issues because economics tells us why things happen. You know, when I was a kid, I grew up in a household. My dad was a coal miner. I was the first person in my entire family to ever go to college. But when I was a kid, I asked a billion questions. And at times, my parents would just say, Brad, I don't know. Go away. Go read the encyclopedia. So I did. I read the encyclopedia, World Book Encyclopedia, from the front to the end. I read it from A to Z. Read everything in it. I can't say that I remembered every single thing, but I read it because understanding why things happen are fun. And this is a great story to exemplify that. In last year, last September, I believe it was September of 2023, out in California, Gavin Newsom signed it into law in California that all fast food workers would make a minimum of $20 an hour. And It was heralded in California as a fantastic thing. This is great. In fact, I believe it was Gavin Newsom who was saying that this, for decades, fast food workers have been fighting for higher wages and better working conditions. And today we take one step closer to fairer wages, safer and healthier working conditions. $20 an hour. Well, what's been the result of that? Economics 101 says that if the price of something goes up, that people will buy less of it, right? That's economics 101. If you go to see movies for a dollar, people will sign up for that. If you charge $50, they're not so many, right? Very simple. You know how that works. So what's happened in California? Well, a company filed for bankruptcy. Rubio's Coastal Grill closed all 48 of its California locations. Pizza Hut franchises across the state are laying off thousands of drivers. And McDonald's across the state of California are laying off people en masse in order to further accelerate the automation of the fast food industry. Why is that? Because, you remember, there was something that went viral about a month ago. Lots of things go viral. But one person spent $15 on a cheeseburger, on a Big Mac or something in California. And it was outrageous. How can you pay $15 for a cheeseburger at McDonald's? Well, it's because all of the people there are making now $20 an hour. And I'm a business owner. The largest expense of any business are people. That's the largest expense. And so if the people cost more to pay to do an unskilled labor, like working at a fast food place, then I have to increase the price of my goods or services to compensate for those higher wages. As the prices go up, you sell less. If you sell less, you make less money. That's simple economics. But apparently, Governor Fantastic Hair himself, Governor Gavin Newsom, doesn't understand simple economics. So what has been the result? The people who actually work in the fast food industry in California are making slightly more money. Why do I say slightly more? Because most of them were probably earning close to $20 an hour anyway. But they weren't being required to pay $20. So you had some who were making training wages, some who were making less. Now they all make more money. You got to lay people off. And we're seeing thousands of people lose their jobs in California because the state of California mandates how much these people must make. And therein lies the problem. Because if a few people are making a few extra dollars and thousands of people are making $0, is it really any benefit at all to those folks who are making zero? And the answer is no. They've been harmed by that law, not benefited by it. And yet, it's a great example of how government has no idea how to run businesses in America. Brad Young with you here on a Monday evening, coming up at 10 o'clock, the best of Dave Glover. I will see you Wednesday next week on Camel X.